We're doing Netivot Shalom on Parshat Shemot. Our topic is Gala'ami Mibelidat. My nation has been exiled for lack of knowledge. Ita basfarim hakadoshim, it says in the holy works. Umvaar biyoter b'sefer hakadosh Ma'or Einayim, and it is clarified most in the holy work Ma'or Einayim. The inyan galut Mitzrayim, that the concept of the Egyptian exile, hu shemidat hadat hayta bagalut, that the aspect of knowledge was exiled. Kmo dechtiv, as the verse says in Isaiah, Gala'ami mibelidat, my nation has been exiled for lack of knowledge. Midat hadat, what is this aspect that we call da'at? What is this trait, this attribute of knowledge? Hishiyudi yodea, that is that a Jew knows, Shakadosh Baruch Hu ha-shalit al kol evarav, ve'al kol kochotav v'chayuto. Hashem is in control of all of a person's limbs, all of a person's strength, all of a person's life. Shekol hakochot shelo hu habore baruchu. That the Creator, blessed be He is omnipotent, all-powerful. Uve'et galut Mitzrayim, and when the Jews were exiled in Egypt, hayta mida zo shel da'at bagalut. That aspect, that recognition that Hashem is in control was exiled. And whenever we encounter evil, that aspect is in exile. Whenever we sense or we encounter something extraordinarily evil, when a terrorist act happens, so the sensation, the feeling is that at that moment the terrorist decided who shall live and who shall die. The feeling is, I don't sense that Hashem's running everything. הוא מביא על זה מאמר הבעל שם טוב, זכותו יגן עלינו על הפסוק. He quotes about this concept, what the Baal Shem Tov wrote on the verse, וסרתם ועבדתם אלוהים אחרים. The pasuk describes, you will veer off the path and worship other gods. דאם סרתם ממידת הדעת, that if a person veers off the path of knowledge, שאינו מרגיש שהקדוש ברוך הוא הוא בורא ומנהיג, he doesn't sense that Hashem is the creator, that Hashem is the guide. He doesn't sense that. הרי זה ועבדתם אלוהים אחרים. The Baal Shem Tov said, the pasuk says, וסרתם, if you veer off the path, if you veer off of that recognition that Hashem is running the world, that is considered as Vavatim Elohim Achirim. You are worshipping other gods. And if you think about it, it means other forces, and that's the way life works. Why does the Mishnah warn us? Stay away from politicians, because when you come close to them, you will end up worshipping them and not Hashem. Because when one is next to someone very powerful, and especially in the days of Chazal, where it was obvious that that person could kill you, so then when you're next to them, it's very natural to feel like your success or failure is contingent on them. They will decide whether to promote you or demote you or execute. So Chazal said, stay away from them. You can't be a God-fearing person in their shadow. You're constantly focused on your fear of them. And if you think of the inverse, one who can connect to the idea that Hashem runs the world at every moment is empowered. Empowered to the degree that Rabbi Mendelovich, we have the good fortune that he teaches here in the Machon, Rabbi Mendelovich was in prison and he took from the prison garments they gave him, he cut out a yarmulke. And the prison warden called him into his office and said, Yossi, take off the yarmulke. And he said, no. And he said, he pulled out his revolver, cocked it, put it next to his head, and said, I'm going to count till 10, and you will take that yarmulke off your head. And he counted till 10, and Rabbi Mendelovich did not remove the yarmulke. And the warden started crying, and he put his head down on the table, and he said, how do you have such strength? And he said, I am stronger than you, because I fear God, and you fear the government. And if you would pull that trigger, you don't know if they would have your head. You don't know if they approve or don't approve. So you're living in their shadow, and I live in God's shadow. And he who lives in God's shadow is stronger. So when a person has that strength, you know, we walk the halls with this giant, right? when the Ribon Shel Olam's running the world and that's alive, so then you could be after so many years of suffering, like Yosef HaTzadik, and he's standing next to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, I hear you're a genius. I hear you're so smart. I hear you can answer my questions. And Yosef says, sorry, sir. God answers the questions. You're correcting the king of Egypt. Come on, this is your chance to get out of prison. What's wrong, Yosef? What are you doing? No, there's no question here. How do you hold on to such self-worth? You could stand up to the king and say no. That's when you have that dot. And this is a key point. This is the mast that holds the sails when there is turbulent storms in our life. There are storms in our life. And there's always the question, is the mast going to fold and then I'm lost? I don't know where the wind, where the storm's going to take me. And sometimes a person feels like, I have no idea where I'm headed. The winds are throwing me in every direction. You will see. You will see. This happens, and I hope it doesn't happen to you. But it happens to people in life that when tragedies hit, they come in mass. It's not one problem. It's a bunch of problems that hit at the same time. How does a person weather the storm? Well, the question begins with the question, does he have the mast to hold the sail? And the mast that holds his sail is this question, is the Ribon Shel Olam running the world? And this can be seen in the micro, and this can be seen in the macro. A person can see it in a small day-to-day dealings. There's a person I know who was trying to grow in their learning. And they were training themselves that even as they walk in the street, they're focused on what they're supposed to be doing in this world. So they're walking down the street, and they walk down right past New York Public Library. And the next thing they know, there's a man being thrown across the sidewalk. What had happened? They were walking, dragging along a suitcase behind them. And they were focused on their Torah and their connection to Ribon Shel Olam. And as they're walking, there was a mugger standing behind the New York Public Library waiting for someone to pass. Well, this Jew is walking past on his way to yeshiva. And the mugger walks out and tries to grab the suitcase. But he's focused. He keeps walking. So the mugger goes flying. He didn't stop. And by the time he realized what happened, he was like 3 feet ahead. And he looks back and there's this mugger like, And look at the guy sheepishly smiles. Now he's out in the street, out in the open, and he didn't walk away with anything, right? And the guy continues unfazed. I was there when a person was hit by a car. And he was fine after being hit by the car. So they asked him, do you want to go to the police? Do you want to file a report? And he says, I'm late for my chavrusa. And he walked. His head was somewhere else. He was fine. What do I need to file a report for? I'm okay. Nothing happened. So a car hit me, so I went flying, but I landed on my feet, and I'm not hurting. I'm okay. Goodbye. Let me continue with my life. I'm not saying it was responsible or not responsible. Where's my head? Where's my focus? Where am I connected? And when a person has that focus, then a person can hold on to what's right in life. I was in the dentist chair. It's a wonderful time for people to talk to you because you can't say anything. You're stuck. So I'm there in the dentist chair. And the dentist assistant tells me, you know, my father's just like you. And I'm looking up like, uh-huh. And she says, he wears a yarmulke too. And I'm going, uh-huh. And she says, we came from Russia. And we never did anything Jewish in Russia. And we just landed in Israel. And we're all in this new apartment looking around trying to figure out what Israel is. And my father tells my mother, I'll be back soon. And he walks out and he doesn't tell anyone what he's doing. And he shows up back And he's in the apartment suddenly with a yarmulke and tzitzis. We never saw him with a yarmulke and tzitzis. We said, Abba, what's that? He said, I can't explain now. I heard they're davening across the street. I'll be back soon. Now the dentist assistant tells me, I don't know what it means to keep Shabbos, but my father does. And we just landed in Israel that first day. He was with a yarmulke, he was with tzitzis. And that afternoon, when we tried asking him what it was, he said, I'll be back, but they're davening mincha now. And he ran across the street and davened, and then came back and started explaining to us what it meant to be Jewish. And I'm listening to all this. She had a captive audience. I said to myself, wow, this man had a vision. This man had a connection. His kids didn't know he had the connection. And when he had the opportunity, it came shining forth. Suddenly, he's there. That's the doubt. That's the doubt that a person, what happens in life, doesn't shift him. He has his constant. He has his connection. The worst thing is when a person loses it. When that's been exiled. Ki ikar hadat, the prime aspect of knowledge, hi ladat shehakadosh baruch hu en od milvado. That's when a person can know, can recognize that there are none other than Hashem, ve'en shum koach zulato yitbarach. There's no force but He. V'kasher sartem yidatzo. And when a person veers off of that knowledge, harei ze kvar bevchinat v'avatem elokim acherim. So he's already on his way. He's already worshipping other forces. There are other things that matter. If there are other things that matter, then I have to please other people. I have to impress other people. And this knows no bounds. My employer is calling, so I'm in the middle of Shmona Esrei, but how could I not answer my boss? But you're talking to your boss's boss. What's going on here? Right? But do I recognize that? Every time we rush out of davening, we have to ask ourselves, why did I rush out of davening? What was more important than my conversation with the Ribon Shalom? Ki'ilu sheyesh od kochot acherim zulat ha-borei baruch hu. It's as though a person approaches life as though there are other forces other than the Creator, blessed be He. V'zeh inyan galut Mitzrayim. This is the concept of the exile in Egypt. Galut hadat, the exile of knowledge. U'kmo shamar Paro, and Paro says it very succinctly. He says, Lo yadati et Hashem. I don't have da'at, I don't have any knowledge of Hashem. V'itziat Mitzrayim, and when Hashem describes how we will be redeemed and leave Egypt, Hashem says, V'yade'u Mitzrayim k'ani Hashem. The Egyptians will attain that level of da'at, they will know that I run the world, that I am Hashem. Shehage'ula, redemption is described as, Hi yitziat ha'da'at mi'hagalut la'da'at et Hashem. Redemption is when you leave that exile of being in exile from the knowledge of Hashem. V'ha'atchalta de'galut haya, the beginning of the exile was when Vayako melech hadash al Mitzrayim asher lo yada et Yosef. The new king doesn't know Yosef. V'ne'enyan ha'galut k'shem sheyeshno beklal Yisrael yishno gam beprat etza kol Yehudi. This concept of exile appears in the macro with regards to the Jewish people, appears in the micro in every person's life. Ukeshem sheyesh galut v'geula baguf, and just as there's the concept of exile and redemption of the physical, of the body, kach yesh p'china, so too there's an aspect, these aspects, b'nefesh, ruach, unshama, with regards to the different levels of a Jewish soul. Be'etshu b'chashchut v'katnut, when a person is in despair, when a person is in darkness, when a person feels so little, harei ze b'chinat galut. What a person is sensing is galut. He is in exile. Uve'et olo v'ubegadlut amochim. And when a person feels that things have, he's been enlightened, there's light in his life, so then that's what's called gadlut amochim. His mind is grown large, so to speak. Zobchinat geula, that is the aspect of redemption. Ubeiur ha'inyan, so the explanation is as follows. Sheikar ha'galuti b'midat ha'dat. What does it mean that the essence of exile is in dat? We can understand it based on what the Ari HaKadosh wrote on the pasuk, Ki ger yiyeh zaracha. the Ari wrote that ger, exile, is because of zaracha. One seed can lead one in the wrong directions. When we speak about one seed, that's when we speak about Adam yada et chava ishto. One uses a seed correctly, he knows his wife. Notice the term again, yedi'ah. It's da'at. But when one allows himself to let his mind wander and then the seed is used inappropriately, so that's his da'at that's wandering in the wrong places. Again, I said, let his mind wander, because the Talmud says that everyone's mind wanders at least once a day. Everyone has an inappropriate thought at least once a day. But do I nip it at the bud or do I let my mind keep wandering? It says, Ein adam nitzol mimem. There are things that a person can't escape from. It says, you can't be saved from them. There are things that happen. Okay, but you can escape from the second split second. The first split second is beyond your control. The second split second is not beyond your control. And that's what it says. Where's our friend? He left. In the Holy Zohar. That tshuva is ordinarily from the heart. But tshuva, where one has misused one seed, has to be with the mind as well. It's not enough that it's with the heart. Because one seed connects to one's mind. That's the idea of knowing one's wife. And when a Jew feels like he does not sense the love of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's because he has blemished that aspect of his connection to Ribbono Shel Olam, the purity of his seed. And his tshuva has to be not only in the heart, but also in the mind. And that's why we find the halacha with regards to one seed, which is different than other halachot. In other transgressions, we say, if you thought to do something wrong, so then, if you didn't do it, you didn't do it. A thought doesn't equal action. But when it comes to one seed, so it says, if a person had an improper thought, and he allowed himself to have improper thoughts, which ultimately led to the spilling of his seed, so then he's held accountable for the thought. The seed happened when he was sleeping and it was unintentional. Right, but he had the thoughts that led him there. So the Talmud says, don't think certain things by day, that'll lead certain things to happen by night. You see here something very different. Whereas with other mitzvot, we're not held accountable. If I intended to do something wrong, but then I didn't do it. I had decided I would, and then I decided I didn't. First I decided I would, or if a person fantasized. He sat there and he starts thinking, what did a cheeseburger taste like? I could salivate now. Okay, it's not the direction you should be thinking. And our thoughts ultimately lead us in a certain direction. But that's not called a transgression. It's okay. If a person says, I miss my cheeseburgers, I miss my lobster, that doesn't make him non-kosher. Say that. But if a person starts thinking about promiscuity, and a person thinks about thoughts that he's not supposed to have, and then at night, when he's sleeping, he ends up spilling his seed, so then he's held accountable. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, why were you thinking that by day? This is the only mitzvah that's like that. He says, yeah, because this mitzvah is in the da'at, it's in the thought.
You're saying that it's only a sin if it leads to that?
I think it's either way it's wrong. No, either way it's wrong. But it's more weighty if it led to that. If it didn't lead to that, it's still prohibited. A person is prohibited from causing himself an erection. A person is prohibited from causing himself. Whatever happened, happened. But causing himself, willfully allowing himself to get there, or even dwelling on thoughts. It says in the Rambam, one of the things that a person must do tshuva for, irrespective of whether he spilt his seed. One of the things that a person must do tshuva for, but people find it difficult to do tshuva on, is lustful thoughts. When a person has improper thoughts, ordinarily a person thinks, I didn't do anything. It's between me and myself. No, there's a mitzvah. You're not supposed to. You're not supposed to. You're not supposed to allow your mind to wander in that direction. And a person has to do tshuva, and the Rambam writes, it's based on a Gemara. This is one of those things that stand in our way of doing tshuva, because we really have a hard time connecting to the idea that we have to do tshuva about a thought that wasn't an action. But you see that that's a transgression, yes. Yes.
I was just wondering, thinking of a question. Someone spills a seed, says like 300 million sperms or something. Does it count like the person killed all of those people, or does it count that he killed one?
Doesn't count like he killed anyone.
It says
a lot of things in Zohar.
It is considered as spilling.
Right. Zohar is a medrash. Zohar uses strong terms. That doesn't mean that literally a person is considered a murderer. I can prove to you from Halacha later. It's not a... If a person walked into the rabbi's office and asks, I can pull the trigger on one person or spill the seed of 30 million, which should I do? No one in their right mind will say pull the trigger, right? So it's not considered murder. No, spilling one's seed is not considered murder. The Zohar says harsh things about it. Okay, did you see what the Zohar says about Lashon Hara? Did you see what the Gemara says about Lashon Hara? You're quoting me Zohar, which we don't always rule like, but the Gemara says Lashon Hara equals murder. You think the Gemara literally meant Lashon Hara equals murder? So before people are concerned about spilling their seed in the Zohar, they should be concerned about Lashon Hara, where the Talmud says, saying Lashon Hara equals murder of three people. That's in Gemara. So I wouldn't rush to interpret Zohar. People don't know what the Zohar means. People don't know how to interpret Zohar. No.
So none of those interpretations are right?
To take it literally? No.
No, I'm saying like in the next one, that they're saying like, okay, so you will be held accountable for those.
No.
No.
Again, a person has to work on not doing it, right? I'm not saying it's mukhtar, but to say...
Why is it wrong?
The Torah says it's wrong. Lo eventi.
It doesn't say...
Based on Chazal's interpretation, it's prohibited.
But for what reason?
Did you ask me for what reason it's usher to eat pig? Did you ask me for what reason it's usher to marry two sisters? Why are you asking me about this? What do we understand why it's a sura?
It's not as clear as not eating pig and not marrying two sisters.
It doesn't say in Torah you're not allowed to marry your daughter. Doesn't say it. It says you're not allowed to marry a granddaughter. You could infer from that a daughter is certainly prohibited. But doesn't say you're not allowed to marry a daughter. Right. It does say that Er and Onan spilled their seed, and that's why God was upset at them and killed them.
But it doesn't say that they died because they were spilling seed. One can say that they died because they were using the woman for sexual pleasure, but they didn't want the seed to be...
Okay, so our tradition is that it's prohibited,
but
biblically.
Is there like a reason for... Except like...
I'm not answering you, I'm avoiding your question, not because there isn't a reason, but because all 613 mitzvot have a reason. All 613 mitzvot have a reason on two levels. There's the level of why did the Ribbon Shalom give us the mitzvah, and that we were not given the fortune of understanding. Hashem purposely kept that hidden. Then there's the reason that we can appreciate the beauty of the mitzvah and appreciate how good it is for us. That is not the same as the first. The first is why did Hashem give us the mitzvah? Chazal say Hashem kept that hidden because otherwise we would always try to outsmart the Torah. Oh, if that's what you wanted, Ribbon Shalom, I'll do it a better way. We'll always think we could do it better. And Hashem knows what's right for us, but we have a hard time hearing that. If we'd know the reason behind the mitzvah, we would always try to outsmart the mitzvah. That's our nature. So Hashem didn't say why, He just said do. Then within that, we can have and we do have an appreciation for the mitzvah. But that's not to say we understand why Hashem gave it. It's a mitzvah, like every other mitzvah, like eating kosher. Not supposed to spill it, see?
But, like, for example, with eating kosher, that is more healthy and all this. So
who said it's healthier? Why do you think it's healthier?
Well, first of all, when we kosher slaughter, we check that the animal is pure. Doesn't have any sicknesses.
But maybe it's moldy by the time you eat it. Mold is kosher. Maybe they left it unrefrigerated for 3 days. Who said it's healthier? Okay, but I'm saying the fact that it's kosher doesn't make it healthy.
Well, the unhealthy thing is added to it. It's not the original.
Fine! But you know what? Coffee is kosher. Wine is kosher, right? And a person can drink wine and destroy their liver, and a person can drink coffee and destroy their liver. It's very difficult to say that it's the healthiest diet. Depends on how you eat it. I'm not sure that eating a non-kosher diet is less healthy. Again, you can eat a kosher diet and become very obese and have high cholesterol, and you've eaten kosher your whole life. A person can destroy themselves. Many carcinogenic foods are kosher. The pit of a peach is carcinogenic, and it's kosher. Person that'll eat too many pits of peaches will find themselves with problems. It's kosher. Marijuana could be grown kosher. Saying many things that are unhealthy can be kosher. So, I think it's very hard to say that it's the healthy diet. Yes? Okay. Yes? Say that, Amir Hashem will get there. Tov. Shabbat Shalom. So the Holy Zohar in this parasha describes the state of the Jews when they went down to Babylon. It says they were umlalim, the Navi says. They were miserable. And they thought that they weren't coming to the world to come. And they thought that Hashem had left them and there'd be no more Hashgacha. Hashem was no longer watching over them. They thought that Hashem had completely banished them. And then Hashem called the armies of heavens and all the heavenly chariots and he said, what are you doing here in heaven? What purpose is there for you to be up here if my beloved children are in exile in Babylon? Why are you here? Go you down to Babylon, and I will go with you. And that's what the prophet tells the Jewish people, Lema'anchem shulachti bavela, on your behalf I was sent to Babylon. And the prophet Ezekiel revealed this to the Jewish people. He said to them, the heavenly chariots, all the heavenly angels have come to live amongst you. When the Jewish people saw that, they were very happy, and they were no longer concerned about their exile. They knew that Hashem hadn't left them. And that's what we learn, that wherever the Jews exiled, Hashem's present exiled with them. So when a Jew has clarity and senses that Hashem is with him, so then he doesn't feel exile. Hashem is with him. And there's already redemption within the exile. When is there real exile? When I feel distant from him. When there is what's called galut hadat. My knowledge of Hashem, my connection with him is an exile. Now the beginning of redemption, you find it says, God saw the Jewish people suffering. Vayeda Elokim, the end of an aliyah. Hashem knew, again, da'at. Hashem saw how down we were. Vayeda Elokim, Hashem gave them back their da'at. Hashem gave them back that enlightenment. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu tells Hashem, Vehein lo yaminu li, the Jews won't believe me. At this state, they don't have da'at. How are they going to believe me? Moshe didn't know what the Pasuk tells us earlier, before Hashem appears to Moshe, Vayeda Elokim. And that's why when Moshe shows up, Vayaminam. That stemmed from Vayeda Elokim. That Hashem again enlightened them. And the redemption had already begun from above. Why were the Gentiles capable of ruling over Israel? Because the Da'at was in exile. When down below, we return to our roots, when we return to that recognition that Hashem is running the show, then slowly their ruling over us lifts. And this idea appears in everyone's personal life as well. As the Holy Works write about the Haggadah, it says, we say in the Haggadah, we thank Hashem who took us out of enslavement to freedom, from sorrow to happiness, from darkness to a great light, from servitude to redemption. Why do we say all that? Because the exile in Egypt was all of those, but for different people. We went through the exile in different ways. There were different levels of how people went through the exiles. There were those who were in Avdut that were enslaved in Egypt. Then you have the tribe of Levi. They weren't enslaved, but they were also in exile. They were also in a certain darkness and not connected the way they should be. And that's the way it is with every Jew. Every person has their personal galut. There are those that they're enslaved. There are those that are in servitude. There are those that are completely taken over by their yetzer hara, and they feel like they've lost self-control. And there are those that are in sorrow. They've lost their zest for life, their happiness. There are those that feel like they're enveloped in darkness. Life has lost its clarity. This all comes from the same concept. Where is their da'at? Has their da'at been exiled? And the beginning of redemption was when Vayeda Elokim, that redemption is eternal. That idea that Hashem says, I'm connecting to you. When a Jew starts sensing that life is not worth living when I'm far from Hashem. When a person starts sensing, where have my thoughts been? I've been so confused. My problems stem from my confusion. And when a person says, Ribon Shalom, I want your compassion, help me get back. Arouse my love. Then, when there's a moment of connection, that's when a person starts the journey back, and he merits, ultimately, to Geulah.